One.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the June 17th edition of Weekly Manga Recap. I am Nick Freeman. Here with me is Chris Larios. Chris, what's going on?
Hey, Nick. I'm trying to decide if I should be offended or not.
By what?
I do a podcast. So not this one, different one, because I think it'd be weird to tell a story about this podcast on this podcast. But I do.
Oh, man, Chris, you'll never believe what happened last week on the show that you were also on with me.
I'm just like, this fucking asshole, Nick, you wouldn't believe him. Anyway, he thought he liked Bleach's chapter last week. I told him, you're a dumbass. Anyway, Nick, what do you think about Bleach this week? And it better not have been you liked it, you dumb piece of shit. No, I do another podcast called the Super Larious Brothers Podcast. I do it for my brother, obviously, hence the name. And it's you know, an all-purpose kind of podcast. We talk about, you know, a lot of nerdy stuff on there. But the most recent...
And only the way that brothers can.
Yeah, it's a lot of us shitting on each other, a lot of gay hypotheticals, as obviously there would be. A lot of goofiness. It's fun, but...
That part may be a little bit weirder.
You guys don't... You don't do gay hypotheticals with your siblings?
I don't have a brother.
Okay. So. If you had one, you'd ask him which guy you thought was hotter, too. Like, if you are, you Joe Manganiello or Channing Tatum? You have to blow one. Which one is it?
No, with my sister, I'm just like, which of these two guys do I have to kill?
But I did one recently. It'll probably be out by the time this episode's out on Podbean. But I did an episode with my sister on as well, and her husband. And we were posing different thoughts. We were talking generally about Walking Dead. And she posed a hypothetical, which was, in a zombie apocalypse, you have to take one of them. Which one would you rather take? Me with no leg, me as in myself, Christopher, with no legs, or my sister's dog, Hershey, which, to emphasize what this dog is, it is a 9-year-old black pug that screams bloody murder if my sister so much as leaves the room. And I said that, I was like, at what point should I just be offended? Like, what level of fucking... deterioration. Like, did you think I just lost my legs and I'm more worthless than your shitty, loud, screaming dog? Just because I can't walk? Like, it's not like I'm, like, brain dead, half bitten, and, like, I have a bomb, like, embedded in my throat. I still have my arms. I can still, like, move. I can still talk. I can still be like, hey, go in that room and I'll cover you with this gun, as opposed to your dog, which is just going to scream at everything. I don't know.
Now, the rest of everyone else was just like, Chris.
Yeah, and my brother and my brother-in-law were both like, yeah, immediately, Chris. Like, why? Like, it's not even a fucking question. Like, why? Like, your dog's nothing but a deterrence. Like, having, you know, Chris is like, you know, it's kind of backup of some notion. He can presumably still move and, you know, he's companionship at the very least. He's not going to be actively getting me killed because your dog screams at everything.
So you say your brother-in-law, as in the same sister's husband.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He completely threw her under the bus on that. He was like, no, that's not even... I know I had to go home with you, but there's no way in hell I'd ever go take your dog over your brother. Like, that's insane.
You need to buy him a beer or something after that. That's cool.
I mean, no, I just feel like...
No. That's something that's just like, okay, I don't have to, like... hate you for the rest of your life now.
I feel like it's so obvious I shouldn't have to say anything to it. I feel more offended by my sister that she thought that was like a like worthwhile hypothetical to offer. Like, it's so offended. It'd be like, alright, you can only have one thing in the zombie apocalypse. Which do you want? It's Nick, but he's got a cold. Or a leaky vial of zombie attracting juice. It's like, what slight disability did you give me? Like, look, I understand legs are important in a zombie apocalypse, but if it's that or a fucking walking car alarm that has no off button, when do I start getting offended by this?
Yeah, it's like, hey, there's people over there. Bark, bark, they might have food. Bark, bark. Oh, wait, they're coming here. No, you can't have this food. Bark, bark. Yeah. Oh, now they know where they are.
I don't know who you are. Just like, I fucking hate your dog, Terry. It's gotten me killed in a zombie apocalypse, and you didn't bring me along solely because my sprained an ankle.
I mean, there's all sorts of, like, you know, horror movies and apocalypse movies where there is someone with a disability along those lines where they require help getting around and stuff, but they are, you know, getting around in a wheelchair while holding a shotgun or something along those lines. It's not like you're just going to be like, take care of me, guys. I can't do anything. I'm useless. Oh, hey, there's zombies over here. We're over here. I can still wave my good arms in order to attract them to us.
And it's so, like, I can understand it if it's like, all right, spontaneous, like, zombie apocalypse begins. For whatever reason, I was hanging out precariously next to an enormous safe, and it just falls and crushes me from the torso down. So my legs are completely worthless. I'm like, look, I grasp if the hypothetical was, how long do you keep me, like, how long do you let me become a burden to you? Because I would understand, I would be a burden. I couldn't walk on my own, you'd have to carry me, or get some kind of wheelchair, or something like that.
If your legs are gone, that means you're lighter by probably around.
Yeah.
How much do your legs actually weigh?
I mean,
30 pounds.
I imagine a little bit more than that. I've got.
Well, know, no, I mean each.
Oh, okay. I was like, I was gonna say, I have pretty good runner's legs. I wouldn't, you know.
So let's say you're like, I don't know, 40, 50 pounds lighter or something like that. That means that you're actually pretty, like, for a person of your height, you would then be skinny. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Oh god. My BMI would be ridiculous.
So you'd be light. So that means that I could carry you around like a backpack while you have a gun. And you could be my turret.
Exactly. Like, there's there's advantages to it, but the thing is, like, even if you did see me as a burden, and the question was, like, when would you just finally just be like, look, if I'm going to survive, I can't keep taking care of you. I'm going to be like, look, my legs are broken. I understand. We had a good run into the zombie apocalypse. Your shitty dog didn't make it. I'll take myself out and just save you the bullet or something like that. Or I'll distract the zombies by screaming horrifically while you get away. So, you know, I'm going to do one last favor to you. It's the fact that it was like, you can have that or my awful dog to take care of. And I'm just like, where would this ever be? Like, where's the conflict? It's like...
That's one of those things where it's like, oh, you with no legs. Okay, that would be a bit of trouble. Yappy dog. Oh, no. Anything but that. Anything but the yappy dog in a zombie apocalypse.
It's like if you post that for that, like... All right, you can have a blowjob from Jessica Alba, but it's, you know, it's current Jessica Alba, or I kick you in the dick and pour chili down your throat. I'm like, one of those is maybe not the best option. The other one's flat out awful. I feel I should be offended, but I don't know. If you want to hear it, the episode's up on Podbean. You can check it out there. We give her. Along the same lines, it's just like pure, like, how the fuck the gall to pose that to
she
my face.
Just thought of that on the spot. I mean, like, I don't know, Chris with, I don't know, no legs, she's, or something like that.
She's a very smart woman, though. Like, she had to have given it a little enough of a thought that she's like, no, this is a worthwhile question to pose.
Well, there is a question in there of like, at which point is a person no longer worth taking along with you? But then it's like, I think you might love that dog a little too much.
Yeah, I think she really just wanted one person to be like, yeah, I'll fucking take along your stupid dog, Terry. And I bet she was hoping that was going to be her husband.
Like, no.
He's like, oh god, no. Fuck that.
Oh god. Alright, we do have manga to talk about. Not the suggestion yet. I don't know about you, but I need more time to read through that. I can't actually... Taiyo no Ie. Right.
Yeah.
That was the name of it. Right. I didn't just totally look at the tab. I have it open in my browser because I'm still reading through it. I totally remember what it was called. We need more time to go through that. In the meantime, we actually have not as many manga as usual this week. First of all, because we don't have any One Piece, which is unfortunate. And secondly, because we're done with Jumpstart for the first time in like a month and a half. So... we just have, what, like 8 series to go through?
Yeah, 8. It's going to be maybe a shorter week. I wouldn't imagine so, because I imagine we'll get caught up.
We'll keep on something.
Somehow by the end of this podcast, we'll still get to Toriko. We'll be like, God, it's like 9:30 already. Something happened. Anyway, let's get to World Trigger.
All right. So let's kick off with the recap portion of Weekly Monk Recap, starting with Black Clover, page 17, Destroyer. So, basically Asta showed up, and he's like, I have this super broken power, so fuck you, Mars, I cut through your cleaver, which is also how the chapter ends, spoilers. Basically...
It's also how the past, like, 7 fights in this series have ended.
Yeah, the chapter is just like, wow, look at all this cool stuff Mars can do. Too bad Asta easily deflects all of it, and so the fight is super boring. There are some nice bits here and there to be found. I actually really liked Noelle in this chapter. I thought that for however little she actually did, she had some cool lines and acted pretty nicely.
I also feel like her dress is getting slightly longer.
I think that it's actually like highlighted in black this time, like her skirt is, so you can actually see where the cutoff is.
Yeah.
I forget what the other aristocrat girl's name is.
Who cares?
Yeah. She's just like, oh, I'm so sorry, I embarrassed myself. And I was just like, well, you have always been like that, but that just means I have to protect you. Yeah, not making a big deal out of it. So, I think she's becoming my favorite character, mostly because all the other main characters are... Mars owns a whole bunch of, like, clone crystal things, and Ass is like, who cares? And he just keeps chopping through them like they're nothing. And he slashes through Mars's armor like it's nothing. And everyone's like, how is it possible that he could defeat his magic? And I was like, he negates magic, so...
I know they're explaining it to them because they don't automatically know what Asta's power is, but I'm like, you know, we, the audience, have been aware of the fact that his power negates magic every fucking week because it's what he does.
And I like how Hans... It is Hans, right? What? I'm not screwing that up.
Douchey glasses guy?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I don't know. I assumed his name was just Glassy's Douche and Glassy Douchey guy.
I got so used to it. I'm not sure, and I've seen his name. I'm just going to pretend it's Hans until someone calls me out on it. So he's like, oh, I can't believe that this peasant has that power. Well, I guess fortune simply blessed him with it. And Noelle says, yeah, we'll see whether or not it was luck. And Luck says, what? What did I do? It's got to be weird having a character named Locke in this series, I think.
Oh, he didn't actually... Oh, I thought I missed that. I was like, oh, that's awesome. He's just like, what? You called my name?
Great.
What'd I do?
So, Marisum is this giant thing of super heavy crystal armor, and Ass is like, I don't care! And then Hans sees that Asta's cloak's been torn open, and he is ripped as fuck! Or at least, you know, he does arm days, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. They're trying to make a big deal out of this. Like, holy shit, look how buff he is. I'm like, that's alright. I know he's got some scars. Like, don't get me wrong.
Well, he's like,
the guy's cut. But it's not like I'd see like that and I'd be like, holy shit. Like, it's not, I don't know. Like, coming from a magazine that has Toriko in it, like, I'm just like, alright.
Also, I feel like we've seen, like, enough of Asta's arms before that this actually looks different. I don't know.
Well,
it's not like he wears super long, tight sleeves all the time. You know, his sleeves will go up along his arms a whole lot, and then you can see more of his arm. It's like, he was not that bad before.
No, definitely not, but he's also always had kind of like a stringy-looking figure, so I can understand the notion of being like, oh, underneath, he's really strong. But still, like, I don't know. This doesn't have much weight to it, because I'm still at the point where I'm just like, I don't, like, what... It, like, why does he have... Because he has this big speech about why he's going to become the Wizard King. And, you know, the Wizard King is here to protect. And, you know, it's meant to almost give, like, some kind of cross, you know, juxtaposition with Mars also wanting to become the Wizard King. But my question is, like, why does Asta want to become the Wizard King beyond the fact that that's the big position in this world?
I don't know.
It's not like, you know, like, I know we're going to compare this character to Naruto. But it's like Naruto wanted to become the Hokage because it gave him respect. Because he came from a place where everybody disliked him, everyone hated him, and he wanted to be admired by the rest of the village. So, you know, the Hokage was the obvious position to go for. But what is Asta's motivation for becoming the Wizard King beyond smile at Yuna, let's become the Wizard King?
Didn't they establish that a bit back?
Like, well, they're orphans, but I know that. But...
He wants to, like, establish a world where there's, like, no prejudice or some shit.
That came up, like, just recently, though. But I'm just like, what's this back? Like, what is...
It's not like that's the only way to do it either.
Yeah, but I'm just like, I just have no motivation behind this character to be like, look, because he has a boring fucking power. He sits there and negates all the cool shit other people are doing. That's his function in this world. So I need something behind this character, like a compelling backstory, a strong motivation, something for me to get behind it beyond he works out really hard. I'm like, all right, that's, you know... cool, but he doesn't even really need to considering his sword cuts magic anyway, so...
Yeah, he's It's not so much he works really hard, so much as he put in the cheat that lets him be invincible.
Yeah. He exists as, like, the one thing that can just topple this entire world.
It's like, he is bowling with the rails up. Yeah, you can have some, like, legitimately good shots in there, but everyone's just gonna see, like, the ball ricocheting off them, being like, okay, so that's how you're doing. Well, fuck you. So, yeah, he cheats, basically, and he wins, and he's like, now let's go to the treasure hall! That's it.
I mean, he does have, I'll give him at least that, he does have kind of a cool line where he's like, I'm the gravel that shatters diamond, you know, based off the fact this guy's got like a whole mineral diamond crystal gimmick to him. So I thought that was kind of cool. But it's kind of also weird that like at the end of it, they seem to indicate that, what's his name, Mars, I think it is.
The crystal guy?
Yeah, he seems to have also want to become Wizard King or something like that. Or, you know, they're trying to add, like, a character to this, and I'm just like, I don't really care.
I mean, I imagine that this is not the last we'll see of Mars, or at the very least, the concept of Jim and Bennett's super soldiers, so...
Well, he was supposed to be, like, the secret soldier of his kingdom, wasn't he? Like, they made a big deal out of that.
Well, maybe also he won't actually be defeated by this, and he'll just get up in the next chapter. I don't know.
Yeah. I need to get to a point where somebody can do something to counteract Asta, because as it is right now, I'm just like, alright, this guy is going to walk into every fight and win.
Bleach! Chapter 630, The Twinned Twilight. What a weird, awkward title. Grimmjow attacked Askanok the Var last time. Askanok runs off all weirdly.
Books it. He's like, where?
Just that weird expression on his face while he does the two. Fucking duck facing while he runs or some shit.
He's doing like the quick in and out breathing. Or maybe he's doing kissy faces towards somebody.
Well, he keeps on doing them, and like the entire rest of the time you can see his face because he keeps on doing the, hey!
Yo, what's going on back here?
While still pursing his lips like that, while he's talking to Grimmjow. He's like, I came to kill you guys, and that doesn't mean I have to fight you face to face. And what are you even doing here? Who are you? I'm Kurosaki's enemy. Well, shouldn't we be friends? Let's kill him together. No, die. And he just like grows claws and tries to kill him, and then we cut away. He's like, was this all just to reestablish? By the way, this is Grimmjow's deal. Do you remember now? Do you remember Grimmjow? I didn't hold off too long on bringing him back, did I? Nah, 400 chapters is just fine.
He's savored long enough. Now is the time to serve.
200 chapters. I don't fucking know how long it's been.
I feel like it's been 400 chapters since this arc started, so I wouldn't be shocked.
We go over to Hashvalt, who is talking with Mustache Mook. That is his name.
I'm Mustache. Like, wait, there's still Sternritter around? Like, I thought.
Apparently, he was chosen. He's fine.
Yeah, he's like, I was the other SS soldier who was chosen. I have a great bit all of them dead. Well, the sadness is
coming gold.
I am Sternritter Ampersand.
Yeah, your staff will have been dispatched in the five directions to look at the enemy. And Jugo's like, alright, wait a minute. Five directions? That must include Ishida then. And he said, yes, that was His Majesty's order. Oh, great. He's off being unsupervised. Alright. Well, you must go after him, stay with him, and if he does anything outside of what was ordered, you must report it to me immediately. Oh, you mean I get to do something important? Yes. Go. Okay, I'm on my arm, man.
I've been murdered. Goodbye, everybody.
So Bass B has shown up and just kills the guy immediately, and...
Everybody remember me, please.
So Jiro turns around and sees guy with a mohawk behind a guy whose head has obviously been burned through, and he's like, is that you, Baz B? No, it's the other guy with the mohawk with fire powers. Come on, man.
Well, no, he has to say this so we can establish in a little bit that Baz B would prefer him just to call him Baz.
Right. I mean, he could have just said, it's like, Baz B, but he's like, is that you, Baz B? You're in the shadows. Can you come a little closer? There you go. Okay. So, yeah, Baz B tries to attack him. Hoshwald pulls... Actually, it's, similar to a really to something that happened way back in Bleach when Ichimaru and Hitsugaya fought, like attacking through the cloak thing. But anyway, he does this whole thing where it's like, aha, I've got you in my jacket, and so you can't see the attack coming, and I just kind of hit you with the pommel of my sword instead of stabbing you. Whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of build up to this guy. He better be awesome.
So Hashimoto says, "Ah, so you were not chosen, which is shown by the fact that you have wounds from His Majesty's Allswollen." And Bazzi says, "Yeah, but you know the rest of us went through it as well. Everyone who except the ones who came up here, the ones who managed to hide and avoid the light, lost their Vosternik, and the ones who couldn't lost their lives altogether." And Notch was like, "Well, sorry. Oh, you must be kidding me. You knew this would happen." And Notch was like, "Well, if I say I didn't, then you won't believe me, so fuck you." But
don't you defeat Bazzi with your logic.
He's like, "Well, after what we've been through, why wouldn't I believe you, Jugo? And you should call me Baz, like you used to."
Nick, I think this is the big reveal. These are their old names. Like, at one point, they only had, like, all the Sternritter only had mildly stupid names, and then part of their initiation, they had to add on to them to make them dumber.
So Bazzi used to just be Baz.
Yeah.
Nah, Nacha Cube used to just be Nacha Cube.
He was just Nana.
Oh, God. So what was BG9 then?
He was,
BG7.
He was BJ. And everybody's like, "BJ, you can't, you're gonna be weird like that. That is an awful name." He's like, "No, I'm BG9, and also I'm a robot, and robots never give blowjobs, so you can't make that joke."
Oh, no, you can still, "I have this weird thing on my face, so there is no mouth for me to give blowjobs.
No wieners can fit through this." What's my power? The oral. Uh-oh.
Bazzi reveals some really weird thing about Jugo and Juhabak, which is that when it is dark outside, when the night comes, His Majesty sleeps, and Hashwelt and Juhabak's powers are switched. That's weird, but okay.
Well, he is the balance, so...
And also, it's a whole lot of Juhabak's lore is about him reawakening, I guess. They have actually alluded to this before. It's just kind of weird. But I love how Bazzi's like, "So that means while you have his power, I'll kill you, and that means I'll destroy his power." Yeah, but he's gonna be as powerful as Juhabak. Well,
nope, doesn't matter.
"I'll get you, Jugo.
I can shoot fire out of my fingers one at a time for some reason. So surely I'll be able to beat him."
And then seems like we're entering a flashback for Bazzi.
No, I think that's for Jugo. I mean, it does kind of look like a Mohawk now that you say it, but I can't imagine we're getting one for Bazzi. Like, I'm enjoying Bazzi.
The castles are on fire, so
I'm enjoying Bazzi on like a ironic level at this point. But I really don't know if I can endure a fucking Bazzi flashback. Hoping it's for Jugo.
Especially with how long Bleach flashbacks tend to last.
Oh god, if this is like Turn Back the Pendulum and it's like Bazzi -6, and I'm just like, "Oh fuck this, I'll come back in a week and a month and a half."
And it's just like, it gets the end of it, "And that's how I became a Sternritter." And you're just
there. Yeah, it's there's been a fucking sword through his throat for the last -3 chapters, and he's just been still telling his stupid story. He's like, "Hold on, I haven't explained why I only use one finger at a time."
Chapter 7.
Yeah. -4. Baz A.
Move on to Fairy Tale. Chapter 440, God Serena.
Yes, and our cover page has absolutely nothing suggestive about it. So,
all the would-be suggestive stuff is going on in the background, but it looks like the girls are actually like dressed fairly normally.
Yeah, like they're actually wearing pants. It's good for them. So, I guess that's a rarity for this series. Just a regular title page. Anyway,
Ray's bare shoulder is the most cheesecake we get this week.
Oh, and what a cheesecake it is. Sorry, I was thinking about Joe Magnell again. I was back to that Joe Magnell Channing Tatum one. I was like, which one would I pick? Channing Tatum looks like he cares for somebody, though. Like, he'll cuddle me afterwards. Joe Magnell just uses and leaves me. Now, so we pick up where last we left with the revelation that Makarov is in prison over in the Western continent that has all banded together. It's, what, 700-some guilds have, you know, united together to form one super guild / empire. Everyone's kind of having their reaction for this, like, oh, wow, you know, he did this all for us. I hope he's okay, and blah, blah, blah. Mest, or Dornbolt, starts to suggest, or maybe, and Urza yells at them to not finish that sentence, as everyone, I guess, has kind of the recollection of, like, oh, he could be dead. But Dornbolt continues that he made sure that when the council was revived, and he got help from Wared-sama, basically the tree guy, to make sure that the new council centered around the Ten Wizard Saints. That's the group that Jura is a part of, and that we found out Wared was part of, like, the top four members who went by their own title, like the Emperors of Ishtal or something like that. Which, actually, I was surprised, because when I first heard it referenced in this chapter, I was like, oh, is this, like, the 18 gods of Merekvatek or whatever that fucking thing was that's not going to play in? But I was like, oh, yeah, they actually did mention that when they introduced the tree guy. So they're going on to explain that, basically, Natsu says, yeah, let's go rescue him. And Urza is like, no, we can't just go out and charge forth into a foam whose power even the master could not contend. You know, someone in their base must have been able
to... Just imagine the kind of power they would have needed to be punched by his super muscle form once, and then knock him down.
They must have at least two people in their guild to manage that tactic. One, possibly, if he's of above average strength. But she explains that the master put his life on the line to buy time, and that was his gift to us, and she won't waste it. Her suggestion is that they rebuild the guild hall, begin taking jobs again, and fully revive Fairy Tail, and that she wishes to see smiles on everyone's faces again, and that's her goal as a seventh guild master. However, her thoughts as an individual member of the guild is different, and they must rescue Master, rendering the past three pages very pointless and unnecessary.
This is why Urza is going to be a terrible guild.
Like, what's the series recently that's been doing this? Bleach, where you're just like, nobody talks this way. Where you're just like, no, we must not do that. We must not follow your plan. We're going to follow your plan. I just had to explain something else first to get into it. But anyway, she explains that, yes, they're going to do it. However, Nick, of course, it's a caveat. Their numbers are going to be restricted to just the members in this room. Because the main issue with attacking this guild is that the sheer number differential between them is astronomical. So going in with the smallest number of people possible is most advantageous so that they can hopefully get in and get out without anyone catching them. For some reason, they're bringing on fucking Wendy and Dornbolt too. But yeah, they're going to go with just these six people. I actually don't know if they're counting Dornbolt in this group. He happens to be in the room, though, so I have to assume so. But he's not part of their five-man team, so I'd like to think they just leave him behind. Or like
all
he's...
right, now let's go and... Where'd you go? Okay, is everyone here? Let's see. Wendy, Gray, Urza, Lucy, Natsu, the cats. Yeah, everyone important. Okay, bye.
Like, I just imagine, like, they're about to head off, and he shows up at the airport with his bags. Like, let's go, guys. They're like, what are you doing here? And like, I was in the room. Yeah, we kind of just meant, like, you know, like the five of us. We're kind of like a team. Why is Elfman here? He's our alternate. In case one of us gets sick or something. This sucks.
But I was there, too. Oh, I guess we forgot.
We're alternately like, yeah, but fucking Naked Mavis was there, too. We didn't bring her along. You just see, like, a crystal in the background looking in the window. She's like... Oh, clink, 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 as she walks away. Alright, but she says, you know, that's our mission. We're going to infiltrate and rescue. We will not engage in any unnecessary battles or disturbances. And she particularly looks at Natsu and she's like, is that understood? And he's like, yeah. But you have to know, like, she has to be aware right now. She's like, that this fucker's gonna screw things up. He's gonna start a necessary fucking fight.
All right, let's do this stealth mission with myself and Gray, the two people who had a covert ops mission going on, and Lucy, who has a utility of powers and can potentially prove useful, and Wendy, who is a support type, and Natsu, who, to contact everybody, literally set the yield on fire.
And also ruined our stealth covert operation that we were doing. Literally fucked it up by being loud, obnoxious, and headstrong.
Obviously, he is necessary for this plan.
Yeah. He'll be our point man. So we cut away to Gajeel, who's outside-ish, and he has super hearing of some sort. I
was going to ask you, has this been established before?
I don't recall this being part of his power set, and even as I try to, like, rationalize it, like, you know, like, oh, well, Natsu may have fire powers, of course he can, you know, I don't know, heat things up with his hand or something like that. Like, I'm just like, how does metal have, like, a super hearing property? I can understand if something bounced in your head or something.
I imagine it has to do with the idea that, you know, metal resonates with stuff, so. Presumably that would cause certain sounds that he's trying to listen in on. I don't know.
If I was going to be vibrations, though, I don't know why they focus on his ear. Yeah, true. He uses magic hearing. Anyway, he uses magic metal hearing to basically hear their entire conversation. And he's like, huh, keep their numbers low for stealth, that makes sense. But if that's the way they're going to do it, then I'll just take a different route. And we basically cut away to Mira Jane and Kana and Luvia having wacky fun time conversations as Gajeel shows up and he's like, we're putting B-Team back together. And they're like, B-Team? He's like, yes, all your favorite tertiary characters of Fairy Tail teaming up together into a side group. Without Elfman, because he's going to be their alternate. And that basically is what happened. Like, he's just like, yeah, we're like, going to team up.
Yeah, it's going to be you, me, let's see, Kana, no, not Levy, because, I don't know, why would she want to come with me?
Yeah, she's just my girlfriend.
Mira Jane, and...
Oh yeah, I'm going to go find that guy who tried to kill us all.
It's going to take us a few months to go and track him down.
Yeah, he's saying that he's going to go find Mr., quote, Mr. Lightning for Brains, which I feel is a bit of a lame insult from Gajeel. I was hoping for something better, like, I'm gonna go find that fucking Boa Hancock fucking dick bag with his limp wrist.
Boa Hancock?
I was trying to think of mean things he could say, and I was like, he had a boa, didn't he? And then it just translated from there. Anyways, that's where we cut there. We go now to the council, where Levy is talking to Jura, and he is, basically, she's putting in their formal application to revive Fairy Tail, and he also explains, like, oh, wow, you're so effective, the council is going to feel your loss. So, I guess she is just leaving the guild, or joining the guild, rather than leaving the council, which is kind of a disappointment. I thought it was kind of cool that both of them had good positions, and at first they seemed like they were going to keep them, but anyways.
No, Nakama, Chris.
Yeah, Fairy Tail. Love is forever. We cut away then to show the rest of the members of the Magic Council who are above Juro. You know, we see Rarard, who's, you know, planning, and he makes a joke about peeing on the floor. And then we see the third-ranked member of the 10 Wizard Saints, Wolfheim. And he gets really angry and turns into a really big monster-looking thing, which is super threatening if, like, three people didn't do this exact same thing in the guild already. I hope they don't try to make this, like, a big deal, like, every time Makarov gets really big and punches something. Just, like, a lot of people do this, buddy. You're not that special. And then we meet the second-ranked member of the 10 Wizard Saints, Hyberion, which is annoying because it should just be a P&B Hyperion, but yeah, Hyberion, yeah. Who looks like a, I don't know, like a Dracula-looking motherfucker. He's got, like, a fucking...
He is more the Count than he is Dracula, though.
Yeah, but he's got, like, the wine glass fucking swirling in his hand and shit. And he's like, the alternate internet... I can't even try that word. Now that we are counselors, we must set an example for wizards everywhere. And Levy is shocked because four of the Emperors of Ishgal are in the same room. And she's like, well, you know, if they're really that strong, don't we at least have God Serena on our side? God Serena being the number one ranked member of the 10 Wizard Saints and the last, you know, Emperor. And they're like, oh, well, about that. He abandoned us. And everyone's like, what? Apparently, God Serena abandoned their continent, joined up with the Western continent, and is now part of a group called the Spriggan 12, which is 12 mages, apparently, on an equal stature to this guy who's the number one ranked master, you know, number one ranked wizard on their continent before. So, Nick, the guild they're fighting, Fairy Tail, is going to have to go up against 12 people who are on the power level of being the strongest on Fairy Tail's entire continent.
Man, it's gonna be pretty awesome when they beat them in one chapter each.
It really is. Like, I've done this before where, like, we get this build-up chapter and something happens. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm totally buying into this. I can't do it anymore.
It's a little, you can kind of tell, it's like, that's too hard to sell. I know that this is not as good as you are making it out to be.
Yeah, like, it's just like, I don't have, these big things they throw about have no scale because none of them have ever sat. You know, anytime Fairy Tail introduces something that's a really big, important deal, they fucking curb stomp it, you know? No one's defeated even 50 monsters in this. Oh, or is it just curb stomp all 100 of them? Like, I just can't buy into this idea that these guys are really going to be that big of a threat. I'm sure they'll get their chapters in where they'll whoop up a couple members of Fairy Tail, but by the end of this, fucking Lucy is going to beat one of them. And that tells you how threatening these guys actually are.
That's one of those things, you know, show, don't tell. I don't care if you say that they're the strongest one, and let me see them kick a few people's asses and have them stand on that for a while. And then you can have Lucy be one of them and have it be a big deal.
Yeah. Now, Nick, do you think next chapter we'll get, like, the reveal of the rest of the council members?
I don't know. I don't really care about the Council of Ten.
Well, I want to... well, not those council members. I meant the 12...
Oh, the 12 shields?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Not next chapter, but it won't be very long, I don't think. Right.
Do you want to do an over-under on if there's a Lully in that group?
No bet.
Alright.
12? That's like approaching certainty, dude.
Alright, prediction then. There's going to be at least one female character fulfill a weird fetish.
Yes.
You want to make your prediction. What fetish do they get?
What fetish? Oh... Okay, what have we had recently?
We had bondage. That was a dude, so I don't know if that one exactly counts.
The girl in that group was freaking radiation poisoning.
Yeah, so
that was a weird one.
Constipation.
But she had like cat ears, right?
Yeah, she did have cat ears.
Oh god. There was a bondage girl in the previous arc before they all broke up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
There's been a bondage girl in a lot of them, to be honest.
Then there was the girl who was a. Then there was the scientist girl, also in that arc.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I am going to say.
It's a tough one.
It's there's so many.
Which one this time? I'm going to go out. I'm going to say we're going to get a variation of bondage. There's going to be a spider themed person, a spider themed woman. So there's going to be a web kind of like bondage thing going on.
Okay, I got an idea.
All right,
we're going to have a tomboy.
All right,
who when their cover is blown. Turns out to have an insane level up to his body that you would never believe they would be able to pass for a man.
Ah.
And they'll be treated very seriously while they are treated as a man, and then will be put in nothing but provocative poses and situations after being revealed as a female.
So, like, at first we think it's a dude, find out it's a chick, and for some reason afterwards...
And they'll have a crush on either Grey or Natsu.
I would go with Gray on that.
Probably.
Because then she can have a slutty fight with Luvia over Gray.
B team's gonna be there, so yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry, Luvia will show up. Alright.
So yeah, that is I think a significantly fleshed out enough for it to okay.
Very good. Alright, well, we'll see what happens in a couple weeks on that and if we either of us are on the money.
Yes, it is just Tsugumi from Nisekoi. Shut up.
Well, I do like...
That's how I thought of it.
I do like, though, the thought. I think Annalise threw it out there of a masochist. We haven't had one of those. Like, it's someone who out there.
But I'm pretty sure that
we've had one. I think
Yu-Gi-Oh was a masochist at one point.
Yeah. So maybe, I don't know, but we'll get like two masochists. They'll both be like, "Oh, I want, you know, hurt me harder so I can be more orgasmic or whatever."
Be more orgasmic.
Whatever they do.
All right. Let's move on now to Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 122, Pepper and Chili. Of course, we're continuing with Soma's preparations for the Moon Festival, where he is trying to force Kuga of the Council of Ten to recognize him by competing directly against him with Chinese food stands, except, as it turns out, this puts him in danger of being expelled in case his stall goes in the red. Which they actually go to great lengths to explain. Yeah, that actually doesn't really happen all that often because the students are so goddamn well prepared for it. They have this shit drilled into them. The only way that this could possibly happen, you know, for somebody to land in the red, is for them to, find the biggest, toughest competitor they can and pick a fight by sitting up shop right smack in front of them.
I can't help but feel you're talking about me.
which is the thing that the Donburi Bowl president is saying to Soma as he has gone to visit them. Their society is getting preparations set up for their own stand, and we find out that Ikumi has basically become the second most important person in the entire club, and a lot of the younger students look up to her and rely on her for stuff, which is why she says that she is not going to be able to help Soma out, which she bothers to mention because she totes has a crush on him. So, there you go. This is, like, the only thing that really happens whenever she comes out. It's just like, I have tremendous tits and don't mind burying my midriff and stuff. Also, I have a crush on Soma. And bye! See you next time. I'm here to establish that.
She has, apparently, a purpose, though. She's getting stronger, so maybe that'll mean she'll play a factor in things to come.
I hope so, because I mean, I do greatly appreciate whenever this series goes into, like, here's what all these secondary characters were up to. That's the unfortunate thing about you coming in where you did in the tournament arc, because that happened with a lot of different characters. You know, a lot of them got their stuff highlighted, and a few of them we hadn't actually seen them really cook before, and you only came in for, you know, a fight with the showdown between
the last match and the last match.
So hopefully we'll get to something like that in the near future. Maybe the festival will be a chance for all that stuff to be shown off again. So wanders around and is like, okay, I gotta go work on my menu. And then he spots that one of the buildings has a whole bunch of preparation going on. And he's like, well, but there's this tremendous massive operation, so I bet... Oh, hey, Nakiri, it is you! And she's like, oh, God, why do I have to talk to you again? Essentially. But, as it so happens...
I would put a warrant out for, like, not sexual harassment, but for stalking at this point. Because this dude is showing up, like, you're always, like, with your back turned, and he's just like, hey, Erna, like, go away! Go away from me, Phantom!
So Hisako comes up and says, oh no, we just got word that the movers are going to be late by an hour because they're stuck in traffic. And someone's like, oh, that means that you're free. You can check out some of the recipes from my family's restaurant if you know, don't mind tasting them. And Irina tries to go, like, why would I? And Hisako just says, you've got 1 hour, so don't keep her any more than that. Which, I actually like that detail because Irina's like, but you're supposed to get rid of him and stuff. But of course Hisako and Soma get along now after what they went through together. So that's nice.
Yeah.
So then he prepares food for them, and Irina just, like, goes straight cold hard facts, like, no, this is wrong. Your ma and la are utterly insufficient, and I'm sure I am pronouncing that wrong because they are Chinese cooking terms. Sorry, shut up. So
I like to think there's one dude from China who's just like,
excuse me, sir.
Nick, how your pronunciation of our ingredients is most inaccurate.
I just went comic book guy, but you're just like, oh, Chinese, I know what I'm doing.
I, that wasn't even my Chinese voice. That was stereotypical nerd. It's like he came in, he's just like, oh, Nick-a-san, you know what spice is. It's all the same, Nick.
No, it's not.
No, it's really not.
But there were tremendous hints of Furious Mickey in that voice. I tell you. Oh, God. So, anyway. Arida basically breaks down. You know, we lump Chinese food into this one category, but seriously, China is really fucking huge, and there are all these different climates and cultures that have their own different culinary styles. And Kuga specializes in Sichuan cuisine, which is known for its extreme spiciness. And then she's like, oh, goddammit, I'm telling him too much. He's gonna actually learn something from this shit. Curse my encyclopedic knowledge and generally condescending nature. So someone's like, oh yeah, well, thank you for the explanations. I'm not trying to help you, shut up.
Forget everything you heard.
So someone basically thinks back to what Hojo had said to him, presumably off-panel, basically that she didn't join the Chinese Food Research Society because Kuga just kind of strong-armed everybody into just focusing on Sichuan cuisine as opposed to all of the different styles that there are to talk about. So she's like, I don't not dislike his stuff, it's just that he only focuses on that, and I don't really like that. And, as it turns out, Kuga has horrible, sadistic cooking style. In his own words, when people eat my food, their faces get as red as a tomato and they start sweating bullets. Yet they're so addicted to the taste, they just can't stop eating it. I get such a kick out of watching that, making the people who eat my cooking scream and beg for mercy. That's so fun, I just gotta keep doing it! I fucking love this series. For fucking motivations like that.
Just like, how can I make a dude who cooks evil? Like, cook so people will be in pain, but also enjoy the good food!
Meanwhile, across, I don't know, fucking Tokyo or whatever, Hiro is just like, oh, if only I thought of that! So, Soma is like, oh, actually, you know, getting people to react like that, you know, that's one of the reasons why I keep cooking, even if, whether or not they're like, oh, it's so good, or if it's so gross that they just faint. And Eri's just like, ugh, this guy's a weirdo. Which he is.
Yeah. But yeah, I do like how they followed up that horrible, like, you know, I want to make them cook until they scream and beg for mercy for fucking Soma to just be like, yeah, I know. I also like to make food until it's so gross that the people faint dead. It's just like, you know, you're kind of fucked up too, Soma.
I can see why you picked Kuga here. So, you know, Soma goes out to think about what Arina has told him, and so basically it's just like, you know, you lack umami flavors, which lie beneath the cooking and the spiciness of his cooking. You can't counter that. You can't win. And so he's just kind of sitting there thinking to himself when Megumi comes up. And so he explains everything that Irina has said to him, and they converse back and forth for a little while, but then she pulls out some Chinese food recipes and gives them to him, and then he's like, what are you doing? I mean, aren't you going to help out with the Polaris crew booth that Ishiki is putting together? It's like, well, yeah. And also, the Home Cooking Society is doing a booth too, but I've turned them down because I thought you could use the help. And then she gets all embarrassed. It's like, I mean, I'm useless and I'm horrible, but I've been trying to learn, so maybe I can help. And someone's just like, you're the best. And, you know, they were going to work together and stuff. But, I mean, it's kind of played off as a joke very quickly, but I did like the just initial moment of, well, of course I turned them down. I want to help you. You're my friend.
Yeah. Very, very sweet.
Then we cut to Valley Girl Alice. Seriously. Like, seriously.
Oh my god.
Is it like, hello, are you home? I have a message for you. We're like totally going to compete together. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, work together with you, Hayama, because Professor Shumi got permission for us to all work together. And so all three of us are going to, you know, do this great thing. Yeah.
I love that she shows up and she's like, how about we all work together? Like, basically, all three of us use the Shiomi Seminar's boot space. And fucking, he leaves. Hayama leaves. Like, he slams the door. And she just appears in front of him again. She's like, didn't you see I already have permission? She's like, what the fuck? Where'd you come from?
And he's like, what do you mean you already have... Oh, goddammit, it is signed by June. And, of course, I'm going to be in charge. Kurokima, stop her! He's like, no, not wearing my headband. Not, don't care. Do something!
No.
And she's like, oh, I'm going to make you both cry at Uncle Yukihiro and Erina. And of course, I'm just like, we're nowhere near either of them. So we're not actually going to be competing with them.
Aww. It was kind of like a funny but a weird end to the chapter. You're like, aw, we're not going to be competing. But hopefully we still get a side story out of them.
Yeah. I want the festival to just have little bits and pieces of all of the characters that have been built up during the break. Because, you know, some of them really haven't even shown up, like, at all. Like, his name keeps on escaping me because he only shows up very infrequently. But Bangs dude. They keep on alluding to him, like, getting stronger or overcoming some sort of personality issue or something like that. And we haven't actually seen him do anything, so...
Yeah. Now, Nick, are you a spicy food kind of guy?
Not really. It depends. I mean, I don't like spiciness for spice's sake, but there are some chilies that are spicy but really good that I do like.
Okay. So if I got you... like a bunch of spicy food, you'd be all for it, or no, or...
Depend.
Alright. I think next time we meet together, Nick, we have to have a spicy food off.
Oh, God.
You can win rather easily. All you need to do is put a bunch of onions in your food. I'm just like, ew, onions! like there'd be literally a small ember coming off the fucking food, and I'd still be like, ew, I'm not eating that because of the onions. Ickies!
I really don't like onions very much either.
Oh, shit. Alright, well, gentlemen's agreement, no onions. And our impromptu spicy shokugeki.
It's not impromptu if we're planning it.
At the time, it'll be impromptu. Like when we ride a bus and I'm like, oh, shokugeki, Nick!
Shokugeki's where you cook!
And I just pull out a frying pan and a lighter.
They're like, sir, stop trying to do drugs. No, I'm trying to make chili.
I just put a pound of ground beef on this. In 30 minutes, it's going to be, well, maybe brown, but...
in, like, the surface, you know.
Yeah, and my hand's going to be really sore from holding this, but I'm winning this.
Let's move on now to Naruto, number 700 plus...
No! My Hero Academia!
Oh, God! I was like, double-take on that because of, whatever. My Hero Academia. Much more important stuff going on. Because, right, last time they established hero names and stuff and then said, oh, and also you have been selected by a whole bunch of professional heroes. So we open this chapter, which is chapter 46, Gran Torino appears, which has an awesome cover page, by the way.
It did, yeah. It's a cover, basically like a superhero manga cover, and like they're all in action poses, including Frog Lady gets to show up
on a building, no less, and so she's crawling up the side while the others are posing on top of it and stuff,
like a Spider-Man almost, yeah.
So this chapter opens up with a bunch of the different heroes thinking about, you know, which pro hero they're gonna try and go for, and so Mineta is like, I'm gonna go for Mount Lady. And, you know, of course, probably just like, you're just thinking of lewd stuff. Just like, completely deadpan expression. Is like, that's all you're thinking of. Of course, you're like, I'm not! So, they go back and forth talking about stuff, and Deku is muttering to himself, like, okay, well, these different potential heroes, I'm gonna divide them up into specialties, and so just very, very big speech bubble that I don't think I ever actually finished reading when I first went through this. And so, of course, he's just, you know, very obsessing over it, pretty much. The teachers go over them with them. You know, you're going to have to choose from the list of stuff. Also, if you weren't drafted, there's also a list of 40 different agencies from all over the country who are accepting interns, and you can choose from that list. And each of them has a different specialty and region. So give your choice on that some real thought as well. So then Todoroki actually sees that, of course, he has been offered a chance to join the Endeavor Hero Agency. Because, of course, he was. I mean,
duh.
Yeah. And surprisingly, Uraraka says, I'm going with a Battle Hero Gunhead. And he says, and so of course Deku is like, "That's he's a rough and tumble scrapper. Why'd you choose him?" And Uraraka says, "Well, he did draft me, but also my fight against Bakugo got me thinking. You know, if I get stronger, then that'll open up all sorts of possibilities. And if I just do the same stuff all the time, then that'll be limiting, or something."
She makes a point.
She actually says it or something, which I like.
Yeah, it's a very good point. She has a kind of like a cool pose while she's doing it too, where she's like punching at the air.
Then after school, All Might approaches Deku, apparently having rushed down the hallway into a bowing position. I think that's what happened. Maybe he was just waiting there outside the door like that. I don't know. I'm really not sure. Whatever. In any case, it's a very bizarre sight, and he actually says, "I am here in a peculiar pose." Which is kind of great.
Well, you are, actually.
Yes, you are, yeah. And so All Might is looking very nervous as he says, "Someone has drafted you, Deku. His name is Gran Torino. He was once an instructor at UA, just for 1 year, and he was my homeroom teacher." And he knows about the situation with One for All, which may be the reason why he has reached out to Deku. So he says, "Yeah, he's a good friend of mine, but he retired a really long time ago." And then he starts just kind of muttering to himself very, very nervously, saying, "Do you think that my guidance was not enough for him? Is that why? Maybe, I don't know, what should I do?" And he's, like, shaking his hands to himself and, like, punching himself in the thigh and stuff, just acting very, very weird, which, of course, Deku gets very nervous about, because, like, what is this guy if he's making freaking All Might so nervous? Let's see. Then we also check in with Tenya, with Ida, I should say, and he has gone for a hero agency in Hosu, which everyone's like, "I thought that he had a lot more better choices to pick from," but of course he has been affected by the attack on his brother, and that is why he is going off. And so everyone is accepting their internships as we cut forward through time. Ida basically just kind of goes over... No, actually, that's the idea. Deku basically recaps, "By the way, what happened to Ingenium on the news after the sports festival, his attacker is still out there, like a ghost in the wind. He's already murdered 17 heroes, put out another 23 permanently out of commission, stayed the hero-killing villain, and Ida never told us anything about it. He didn't mention a single thing." So... Deku says to him, "You know, we're your friends, so, you know, if you really need to get something out there, just, you know, talk to us." And Ida just turns and he says, "Sure." And then he leaves. And Deku continues the narration, "At that moment, I wish I'd said more than that to him, because I would eventually come to regret that day." Or that might be Ida's narration, not sure. Whatever.
Yeah, actually, we don't know. I assumed it was Deku, but... Maybe it is. So actually, I thought about that at the time when I was thinking of it as Deku. I was like, you know, what else were you really going to say? Like, were you going to force him to be like, "Something's up that I don't know, but I believe something's up, so tell me right now." But maybe it would be more logical for him to be the one saying it. Which puts it in a different context as what I was about to say, because I was going to say, what do you think happens to him? But I suppose if he was saying that I'm going to regret it, maybe... I thought maybe it's like, oh, but he's becoming like an anti-hero, he's becoming a villain, does he die? I'd assume if he's dead, he's not thinking it. even a villain, maybe. Yeah, I don't know if he'd regret it, per se, if he really goes down that path. But I think it'd be interesting. I think what we're seeing maybe is going to be an anti-hero then.
So Deku heads into this kind of ramshackle apartment and heads into Gran Torino's place. And Gran Torino sees that he is trying to steal stuff off of his car. And so he pulls out his gun and tells him to get off his lawn. And then he manages to get all the Hmong people to come out from under the tyranny of a gang by sacrificing... I'm sorry, I really love that movie.
I was kind of following along, and you started doing it. I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of like just like what he does in the movie. And I was like, wait a minute. I don't remember him taking a gun and shooting anybody off his lawn. Man, that was such a good... This is an anecdote. And this is also a spoiler if you haven't seen Gran Torino, although I think you just kind of did it anyway. But just in case you haven't seen it. So, when it gets to the end of it, he's going to confront this gang, and it's fucking obvious he's going to die.
Yeah.
Everyone knows it.
Because he's made preparations.
He knows it, yeah. it's this long, really touching, like, heartwarming movie about this guy, you know, trying to almost find something in his last moments and then, like, making this sacrifice. And you know he's going to die. And I saw this movie in theaters. And it's such a somber moment as he's quietly going through the steps preparing for his death. And some dumb bitch behind me is like, oh my god, do you think he's going to die? I had to, like, hold myself back from just turning around and slapping him. Like, of course he is! Now shut your damn mouth and watch this death happen.
Watching it be sad.
Oh, I noticed you're eating goobers. How appropriate. Shut up and watch the movie.
Anyway, so Deku goes in is this dark room, and he's like, I came from the academy, and I'm Izuku Midoriya, and it's nice to meet you. Oh god, he's dead! The guy is just lying flat on his face in a pool of red fluid, and there's guts hanging out, but immediately the guy's face shoots up, and he's like, I'm alive! And he just gets up and he says, oh, I slipped and fell while carrying ketchup-covered sausage links. How clumsy of me! And who are you?
Shitty me!
And he said, I'm Izuku Midoriya, and I've come from UA. What? I'm Izuku Midoriya, and who are you? This is the most stereotypical, forgetful old man.
He does it like four times in the span of like a minute. Who are you?
I fucking love him though. So, he's like, okay, let's eat lunch. Toshinori, that's not my name. I should make a phone call because this guy is clearly off of his rocker. Oh, show me your one for all, and I want to see how well you can control it. Oh.
Do a dance for me!
Oh, you've got your superhero costume. Put her on and come at me. Who are you?
It better be a slutty costume. I don't really want to.
So it just goes back and forth between him having these, you know, serious moments. Like, oh yes, let's get ready to train. Who are you? And then Deku's just like, all right, look, I have to learn how to control this power. All Might doesn't have much time left. I don't have time to mess around with you. And he just starts to leave. And so Gran Torino suddenly bounces around the room and stops right above the doorway, and he says, then I'll tell you once more. Come at me, you neophyte. While making a very terrifying face, actually.
Come at me, bitch.
Oh, yes. I'm going to kick your ass, whoever you are. So, yeah. Gran Torino made a pretty fucking quick impression, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, he did. As an amusing little guy. Definitely dug it. I was trying to think of anything else. I like this chapter a lot. I like what we're getting built up to. I like the slow tease we're getting about Ida. And I don't know if that's something we're going to get to right away or anything like that. But I love all the slow builds we get with these different characters. You know, we've got a big one going on with Todoroki. We're getting some more with Urahara. Or is it Uraraka?
Uraraka.
And of course, you know, the ongoing dilemmas of Bakugo, who unfortunately does not end the chapter screaming at anything. I was hoping there'd be like a really small panel where he'd just be like, my fucking buses! Or something like
stupid fucking public transportation!
Like, not even at the bus, like he's watching a television show with the bus, like he's watching Speed. He's like, motherfucking buses!
Or like he meets his own ancient, forgetful instructor. He's like, I'm fucking Bakugo! Oh, Lord Explosion Burner!
Got Lord Explosion Death! Like, I think they told you to not use that name.
Now let's do Naruto. Chapter 700 plus 7. Genetic Slaves, which opens with a 2-page color spread with a fucking rainbow over Konoha. That's weird.
As we see Team 7.
Team 7.
What is going to be Team 7? You forget because two of these characters have shown up in like three chapters and nothing else. Also, I wasn't sure if this was something that, like a hint or something, or if this is just like a line. I didn't know if that line on Sarada's stomach is supposed to be like a scar, or if that's just supposed to be the line for like her abdomen muscle.
I imagine that's just her ab outline.
Okay.
You know, they tend to do only one of those to, like, emphasize, like, she is not super cut, but, you know, you would only, like, see the natural curvature from that angle, basically.
Yeah. I just wasn't sure. I was like, Nick, I found a secret!
If she does end up getting wounded in the stomach, then, good call, man.
I'm like, I figured it out.
Also, they've apparently gone skydiving for some reason. Seriously, what the fuck are those kids doing?
I don't know. Well, there's also water. I guess they're jumping down a rainstorm. I don't know. Maybe Naruto's practicing for his Kaku cosplay, and he wanted to get the pose down right before he, you know, stretches his nose out into a giant square.
Anyway, so
it's good fork playing, honestly.
So Sakura has been abducted by Jin and his clone Jin's, and Jin's like, these kids are clones of myself. They possess the same genes as me. They exist to give me spare parts. And Sakura's like, what, you've got just a bunch of clones? Are you Orochimaru? He was my mentor! So, yeah, the guy who did all the terrible experiments, turns out he probably kept on doing them, or at the very least, Shin was left over and he never told anyone about it, like a douchebag. So yeah, he's like, I am a former experiment of Orochimaru's for the development of cloning techniques. I created them by culturing my teeth and nerves!
Ew. Why didn't you grow your teeth back then?
I don't know.
Why didn't you take some teeth from those kids? If you have, like, a bunch of them, why didn't you take, like, a couple teeth per kid?
Yeah, if he has no teeth, he should actually be like, I created them by culturing my teeth and nerves.
Where are my figurative fangs? What's that? Figurative fangs! I don't... Paper! Figurative fangs. Oh, yeah, that would have sounded kind of cool, I guess.
You know, you could just wear dentures, right?
Woohoo!
So, we cut then back over to Naruto and Sarada and Sasuke, and Naruto's like, oh, they've gone too far away or escaped inside a barrier. I can't sense Sakura's chakra at all. Because I guess he can do that now. I don't know. Is he...
When you get married to somebody in Naruto, Nick, you can sense their chakra.
No, that's Naruto saying that.
Oh.
So does Sage Mode, like, give him super sense? I don't know.
It did have an affinity for... It was very sensitive to chakra, if I recall.
Oh, okay. I just don't remember that. So they basically go over what's going on. They're like, oh, you know, it's kind of like Danzo's right arm, the way that guy had, you know, Sharingan sticking out everywhere. And then Sasuke says, and Orochimaru was the one who'd given him that arm, which is a detail I also don't remember. But they might have established that. I don't fucking... So Naruto's like, alright, in that case, in order to find Sakura, we'll have to go and see more characters from the past. I mean, go see Orochimaru.
Hey guys, you've been wondering what Yamamoto's been doing? Yamato? No?
Might as well be Yamamoto from how much he's shown up in this series.
Anyway, here he is.
So Sasuke's like, what should we do about the kids? And Naruto says, well, they were targeting Sarada because of her Sharingan, so it's probably safer if we just, you know, have them go with us so they can't be used as hostages. Because, ha! Fuck, if we were gonna walk, like, I don't know, 3 hours and drop them off. Too lazy!
Can't be doing that.
Then Chocho is just like, have some chips because you guys are being so sad-looking!
Not just that, Jitnik. She has chips and a fat joke. She's like, the only thing that should be heavy is my weight! Oh my god, I hate you, Chocho.
You liked her after, like...
There was like, one chapter where I was like, Nick, come on, she's levity. She brings some balance to this situation.
Now it's just, like, now those scenes whenever Chad and Orihime are fucking around in the background doing weird, unnecessary, poorly timed comic relief.
She's like the Jay Leno of this series. She's got like one like set of jokes that she's just gonna hammer in over and over again for the lowest common denominator.
I think it should be heavy as my weight. Heavy like my weight. Subway!
What was that laugh?
Oh, no.
Is that your Jay Leno?
I don't watch TV.
Like he's a 20 mobster. Yeah, everybody. Big show tonight. Yeah.
You never guess that. I don't watch Jay Leno. So Shin's just like, yeah, so fucking kill these clones. You know, survive forever without change. The sheep of progeny and stuff. Do the heart surgery. Do it. Do it.
You know you want to.
And Sakura's like, you're an even bigger fool than Orochimaru. It's like you don't understand at all what should be important as a parent. And he's like, they're not my kids, they're my clones. I literally grew them for this purpose.
They exist for nothing else.
Why don't you understand this? Maybe on some level, like, you think that it is my duty to care for them, but I don't. Because I'm evil.
I really don't. I don't know why you can't grab this.
So do the surgery.
Seriously, I'm dying.
She's like, I don't want to, though. You're like, you tried to kill my kid and my husband.
Shit.
Do it!
I really should have had, like, a laser gun or something pointed on you. Oh, I really fucked this up. You can really just walk out and leave me to die.
I only have the Sharingan superpowers that don't actually hurt people. It's kind of lame.
I should just use one of my thousand eyes to recreate reality so I'm not dying, but... fuck. I had to look down.
So Naruto and company meet up with Yamato, and Chocho's like, this guy is definitely not my papa.
I guess because he's so old and lame? I don't know. And I'm not even trying to shit on Yamato. I guess that's just what her...
There's no explanation for it. She's like, this is definitely not my dad, man.
Yeah, I'm like, why not?
So Yamato leads them to Orochimaru's hideout, I guess, and doesn't go in with them?
Well, no, because he has to watch over to make sure Orochimaru doesn't do anything.
Oh, right, he is on guard duty, basically, to make sure Orochimaru doesn't do something, and Orochimaru is just like, it's okay, made a secret tunnel. This guy just popped out somewhere else where he's not looking.
Or I guess he just watches from afar, because Orochimaru is even, like aware of it. He's like, well, you know, I'm not doing anything suspicious, or you probably would have heard about it from your guard you stationed outside. He's like, he's clearly not even, he's very nonplussed about the whole thing, like, whatever, yeah, okay.
So... Anyway, they head inside, and Suigetsu and Jugo are there to greet them, and Suigetsu is looking all, I am totally grown up now, and Jugo's like, I got a haircut.
Oh yeah, you guys were things.
So Soraya's like, oh, they were in that picture that was at my house, you know, the one that girl who I think might be my mom is in. So they're just like, hey, let's go talk to Orochimaru, and Orochimaru comes out and he's like, hello everyone, I'm still as young looking and creepy as ever. Hi.
I'm still Michael Jackson.
And Chocho's like, hey Sarada, if this person were my parent, would they be my dad or my mom? Or actually, she just specifically is just thinking that part to herself, and then she just turns around and says, which is it? And Sarada's like, what are you talking about? Which does actually make that a lot funnier. Let's see. So Sasuke is just like, there are some people who looked like they might have been in your experiments. If you're plotting something, tell me. And he's like, well, I'm not doing anything suspicious. I'm just Orochimaru. I'm never suspicious. Ooh.
I like to think he's doing that while, like, fluttering his arms around, like, ooh. Like he's really a fanny, annoying ghost.
Sasuke's like, this is why I killed you, you know.
God, I hate this guy so much. Why did I agree to come here? Like, doing, like, a circle around them.
Sasuke, I'm a wacky inflatable arms playing too bad.
I'm just running circles around Sasuke doing it. I put up with this for, like, 2 years.
Oh, God. So, Orochimaru just flat out says, yeah, he was an experiment of mine. So, yeah. Yep, that was Shin. And, also Danzo and... Basically, Shin is where that arm of Danzo came from. This boy is special. He possesses a peculiar trait where his body wouldn't reject any tissue transplant. And I wanted a whole lot more bodies like his, so I just kept on performing cloning experiments and then went on to unravel the mystery of genes! Yes! I know everything about genetics now. So, fuck you. And so, yeah. He calls them permanent doppelgangers, basically, because, well, that is what they are. He essentially concludes, if you want to eliminate them, your only option is to kill them. And Naruto says, humans aren't such simple things! Are such experiments proper! And Orochimaru's like, oh, you know, fucking genetics, yeah, they are that simple.
Yeah. Hold on, the argument's supposed to be longer than this! Wait, I don't know what's happening!
wait, let me think of my rebuttal, because you brought up some good points, and I have to bring in my philosophy knowledge of this, which is very limited, so it's going to take a lot of brain power. And Sarah just jumps in. It's like, what about siblings, you know, parents and children, not just clones? And Orochimaru's like, well, yeah, I do, you could actually figure that stuff out with your next, yes. And Chocho's like, oh, Sarada, no, I can't figure out this one's gender or words. So they're scary and creepy.
She just looks up at the Vanity Fair cover. She's like, ew, I'm confused and angry.
And so Sarada's just like, you're right, Fox News.
I was just like, if there was any way I could hate her more, she's not only fat and unfunny, she's a bigot too.
So Sasuke's like, I bet you know where Shin is holed up, so tell us. And Orochimaru's like, oh, I guess it would actually benefit me as well as Konoha if you were to capture that troublesome Shin. So I'll explain more, but let's, you know, go to a different room first. One that has a screen. Because I like watching TV or some shit.
But yeah, I have this really sweet PowerPoint presentation to show you. I swear to God, Orochimaru, first slide. As he's doing it on screen as well.
It all goes back to when I was a little boy.
It's a shot of, like, a nurse holding a blue blanket and a pink blanket confusingly over the baby, like, oh.
And the baby's just going, oh.
The baby's just got, like, a playful finger over his mouth while he's, like, tucked his legs together. Ooh, what is it? Like, I hate this weird-ass confusing baby.
Orochimaru, we know you're actually a guy. Oh, really?
It's not the fact you're androgynous that we don't like. It's the fact you're annoying and antagonistic about it.
You're not actually trans. We know this.
Also, you're sucking them fucking other fetuses in the room to stay forever young, and you're still a baby. Well, you gotta look your best.
It's like my daddy's big gulp. Oh, God. So Sarada pulls so we get to the side. After they fall behind the group and just takes out the picture and says, hey, who, do you know where this woman is? And he says, oh, that's Corinne. She's actually in a different hideout, so she's not here. And Sarada says, all right, in that case, there's another favor I want to ask you. And so they head back to the previous room with Orochimaru's genetic stuff or whatever. And Suigetsu is like, oh, so Sasuke was that scummy of a loser bastard? Says, well, it's impossible.
I like that this is where Naruto has his moral high ground. He's like, you cheated on Sakura! Also, you tried to kill a whole lot of people. But holy shit! So, infidelity?
So, Sora says, well, it's just a possibility, and that's why I want you to analyze who my real mom is. And so, they're like, okay, yeah, there is something here. It's actually in Karin's desk, which is only told to us just so we can see her new hairstyle, I guess, which looks incredibly similar to Sarada's. And then Suigetsu is like, aha, yes, this is from when Karin was born. Let's harvest DNA from a literal link. So apparently it's got information on her genes and shit in there. I don't know. And then they swab Sarada's mouth and then stick it in this machine. And Sarada waits intently and then it goes, perfect match. And so Suigetsu's like, I guess your mom is definitely Karin.
That'd be great. Suigetsu's like, stop! Enhance! Boop, boop! Like just other shit that machines like this would never do. It's got like a lie detector that dings on it.
Which I don't know if you go with perfect match. Doesn't that mean that she would be a clone of Karin's as opposed to her child?
Maybe.
Yeah.
That is what this is, Nick.
Yeah, maybe that's the actual twist.
Maybe Suketsu's just an idiot and doesn't know how to read this thing. He's like,
well, huh? I mean, this is clearly not his forte.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, those wavy lines look similar to the other wavy lines. You must definitely be her daughter. Although, actually, if you look at the two lines... No, never mind, they are... Okay, never mind. I was looking at it from a different perspective.
I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, you know,
when
children inherit half of each parent's genes, basically. And so that's why siblings tend to be much more similar to each other than they are to their parents. So, yeah, it's weird that she is that similar to her mother, if that is actually what it says. Because if it just, like, analyzing potential parent-child relation or some shit like that, that'd be different. So, I don't know. In any case, first of all, Naruto has apparently backtracked, or maybe just a Shadow Clone business backtracked and is listening in on this whole thing. And so Sarada, of course, freaks out because, you know, she thought that Sakura was her mother, and it turns out, nope, she isn't. And Suigetsu is like, well, okay, this is awkward.
Oops.
Gonna just go out here. Bye. And leaves Sarada to just cry to herself. And Suigetsu's like, I feel like I might have done something bad here. And Naruto's like, gosh, fuck you!
You ruined everything!
So Suigetsu says, so did you know about this? And Naruto's like, no! What the fuck happened to that, to Sakura's pregnancy then?
What, did she just get fat for 9 months and stop being fat?
That is incredibly good timing! So Naruto sticks his head in the room and says, Sarada, we're gonna leave soon. You know? So Sarada just thinks to when Naruto said, yeah, you're really similar to Sakura, you remind me of her. And then she says, you're a liar. You're a liar. Why should I go and rescue someone who's not my mom? You guys have deceived me all my life. Go to hell. And of course, she's so incredibly emotional about this that her charm kind of activated. So I kind of figured that eventually something along these lines would come in, you know, because the whole point of this story was Sarada is doubting the legitimacy of her alleged parentage. And so eventually we had to have some damning piece of evidence to mislead her somehow. You know, it was emotional, so.
Yeah, I know there were a couple people out there who were just like, can't believe Sarada's, like, being this fucking mean. I'm like, I can get it. She's a fucking,
like... Are you kidding me? She's freaking 12!
12 years old at, like, the start of just hormonal imbalance and just found out that her mom's not her real mom. And after she, like, kind of deliberately poked at it and was, like, evaded on the issue, now finding out it is a lie, you know, I can understand her being kind of aggressive and bitchy about it and, like, the instantaneous reaction. So, yeah, no, I dig it. And, again, we're getting more, just more Sarada. I can, as long as this is the path we stay on, I'm all for it.
Okay. So now let's move on to...
Toriko.
Yeah, Toriko. It's weird to just have, like, nothing in there. I guess One Piece.
Teardrop.
Toriko, chapter... I don't know. 327. Deployment. The pairs that were established last time set off in this chapter, basically. And there's this weird joke because Rin, you know, is saying to son Toriko, oh, come on, you know, be careful, Toriko. And then Toriko said, yes, and I'll be back in 1 month after I've gotten a hold of God and we're safely reunited. And then let's get married, Rin. And she blushes and starts to tear up. And of course, the venue will be Hotel Gourmet, Komatsu. Komatsu has the exact same reaction as Rin.
He's blushing just as much, like, ah! I don't know if it... I'm guessing it's because he's like, oh, wedding! And he's just like that kind of guy. Or I just like to think he's just like, we're gonna use my hotel! I'm gonna make so much money! Oh.
Well, that's when he reacts to it. So and I like how Toriko says, why are you blushing? So everyone sets off in their own super awesome transportation fish things, which Zebra and Brunch have a blowfish with a fucking fortress on its back called Ballistic Blowfish, which is kind of fucking amazing. And they're like immediately beset upon by some even bigger fish, which just starts to launch his cannons at.
So. Dear. That's scurry.
Also, Sunny doesn't like being paired up with Live Bear, and he's like, oh, come on, call me Live Bear for short, Sunny Bunny. No, I'm not going to call you that. Oh, well, you know, there's this beautiful place in Area 5 that we're going to, and that must be why we were chosen. How are you chosen for that? Oh, I want a sample of your taste of your food history, Sunny Bunny. When did Live Bear just become super, super gay?
I like to think he's not gay. He's like Orochimaru. He just embraces being uncomfortable and weird. Like, he's also just like around the submarine the entire time. He's just sunny, like, I hate my life. Like, Live Barrett just supplements it by occasionally licking Sonny's face or something like that. Just an extra level of, like, oh, God.
Remember how creepy I was in the Las Vegas freaking level, or whatever it was?
It's like, no, I wasn't there during that arc. Oh, you're gonna full dose of me now, then.
Coco has teamed up with another poison guy because of fucking course he has.
Well, like, they at least explained it, like, yeah, because both of us are working together, it probably means that where we're going is going to be pretty poisonous. I'm like, okay, I'm glad we can just get that out of the way. Yes, there was also, again, in this situation, a poison-themed opponent for Tokoko to fight.
Then Toriko and Sturgeon have awkward conversation, because, like, hey, remember that time we fought? Yeah. Yeah, you're different from then, Toriko. You're, like, super strong now, and Toriko's like, you know, after I lost to you, that was the only loss that I couldn't wipe from my mind, no matter how many victories I enjoyed after. And even now, it's a loss that still pierces my heart. Now it feels like it'll have the opposite effect. And fanfic begin. And yeah.
He has to be aware of it, right?
I mean, come on.
Yeah, like, he has to be sitting there like, I am. Come on. I'm aware of what I'm doing.
I mean, look at how magnificent Sturgeon's hair is. Meanwhile, Gigi and all of them are going to Black Triangle, so they have a little conversation with Komatsu, and then they're like, yep, going to the Undersea Gourmet City Blue Grill. So, I don't really know how much of these diverging plot lines we're actually going to get to see, because Toriko is a series that doesn't actually deviate from Toriko himself too much. So, I guess we'll see.
I feel like we're not going to get any of them. Like, I know it's, like, weird to say it, but I feel like we'll get glimpses of it, but we're not going to get, like, full... I feel like there can't be enough faith in, like, Coco and Sunny to be like, these guys can carry, like, a, you know, 15-chapter arc on their own. I just don't see that. I mean, I'd like to follow them. I would like to see more of them. I just can't imagine there being enough faith to actually go ahead with it.
Zebra and French get back, and they just spend the entire, like, reintroduction to the series talking about all their badass adventures, and you're like, I don't want... Why couldn't we see them?
They're like, and then there was a tortoise with a fucking bazooka on its back. We ripped its head off, and we used the bazooka cannon to blow up a tree monster!
Nice. Okay. And, so we have to now wrap up with World Trigger, if I can remember what fucking page it was on.
It's on 52. Chapter 105, Afakator Part 4.
Right, so last time it was revealed that Enidora was somehow inside of a little robot. His horns were on it. So, yeah, he's like, I'll tell you guys everything, you maiden monkeys! And so they're like, what the fuck? What the fuck is this? And they explain, Kikuchihara actually specifically explains, it's the Black Trigger guy who was rampaging through our headquarters. And so like, well, but didn't he die? Well, yes, the guy himself is dead. That thing is a rad that we transplanted his horns into. Because their horns contain biological data from the host, and his horns had actually fused with his brain, which is presumably why his personality and memory were preserved in them. So, there you go. But, of course...
Also, he likes to squeal.
Right. But, of course, everyone's like, you know, he's being so, like, extra cooperative with us. He's so desperate to give us information. It seems suspicious to us, which is why we needed you to come in, Yuma, so that you could tell us whether he's lying or telling the truth. God, that would make interrogation so much better, wouldn't it? Yeah, Kinoda is like, you know, we don't really know how effective your lie detecting side effect is going to be. And he's like, no, it's good enough. It's good enough. I mean, I knew that you were lying about going through with torturing Husei, so yeah. Nice little stuck that one in there, basically. So Kinoda starts the interrogation with Yuma standing there beside him. I assume that they're looking through a one-way mirror of sorts, I guess. It's never really established.
I think it's just a screen, because I thought he commented on the fact that he saw Yuma, he sees Yuma there. I could be mistaken.
So Kinoda's like, alright, what was your objective? What was the point of the invasion, and why did you want to kidnap people with high levels of Trion? And so Inidora says, well, mostly to use them as soldiers, you know. And Sukino says, well, no, that's not actually useful. I mean, that goes without saying. Why did you have this large-scale mission involving your Black Triggers this time? Why did you invest so many resources to secure people with high levels of Trion? That is what we want to know. And Inidora says, that is because the god of Aftokrator is going to die soon. And Osama's like, what the fuck is he talking about? And then Inidora goes on to explain that while the countries in their world are individual planets, they float in the night sky. Triggers are used to create those planets. They are giant triggers, often referred to as the mother or queen trigger. The god is thrown into this giant trigger as a sacrifice to look over the planet for the rest of their life. They become one with the trigger and take care of the planet for hundreds of years until they ultimately die. When the god dies, the planet dies with them. There is no wind, no rain, and eternal night. Aftokrator has only a few more years until that happens. That's why we are traveling everywhere to search for our next god. Well, that's a bit of a bombshell, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very interesting one, because it does add a lot to this world, to be like, oh, hey, you know, it kind of is like our world, except, oh, hey, all of our planets are giant, you know, triggers, essentially, that are constantly being refreshed over and over again, or else you disappear into oblivion.
So Kino's like, oh, so you're intending to actually turn our agents into, you know, that sacrifice. And Inidora says, well, no, we actually carefully screen our gods carefully. And so because of that, that is why we have ascended to greatness and become the Holy Land. A handful of small fry can't handle the job. Although there was one little bird that seemed likely candidate. I wonder what happened to her. So now that throws extra danger into the idea of Chica being captured, because her super awesome Trion could be used to, well, get her killed and turn her into a fuel source, basically. So Kino basically gets him back on track, and he says, alright, why did you infiltrate the base and try and kill civilians? And Inidora says, oh, you know, my job was to create a disturbance. I was told to get inside here and kill some meat and small fry. Those are my orders, so I had no choice. And Yuma's like, he's lying. So, again, just say that again, and Kinuda covers it up by saying, we're actually comparing details with some of our other captives. So Inidora says, ah, must be Husei. That serves him right. He got left behind. Well, you're lying too, old man, because that dog would never betray his country. He'd rather die than cough up information. I'm not like him, though. I'll tell you what you want to know. Because fuck it.
Yeah. You want to know what their fucking shoe sizes are? Well, I don't know that. But I do know their pin numbers.
He even goes a step beyond that by saying, if you want to get your kidnapped small fry back, I can even guide you to Aftokrator. That's if you even have the technology needed to send a ship. And he says, no, he's actually telling the truth. So Kikuchihara chimes in and is like, what, did your personality just improve after you restricted your humanity? And so, yeah, they don't believe him. They're like, why are you trying to cooperate with us? And Inidora says, my goal is to kill the guys who betrayed and murdered me. I'd work with the civilization of monkeys to accomplish that. Yumov's like, well, he's sort of lying. It's a half-truth. He has another objective. But he would be on our side, and he wants revenge for his murder. So, let's see. Kino says there are a whole bunch of other questions that they could ask him about, but they're going to basically hold off until later. And so he says, you know, we're going to need you back for more interrogations, Yuma. We can't be stuck with any bogus information. And amusingly, at least to me, Yuma says, okay, yeah, I'm free most nights, because he doesn't sleep.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I didn't realize that until you just mentioned it.
So Kikuchihara and Osamu and Yuma are hanging out afterward, getting a drink, and Yuma says, you know, maybe this means that we'll get to do some away missions to Aftokrator sooner than we thought that we might. And Kikuchihara says, yeah, they might actually make an away team early this season. So he was like, yeah, well, we better fucking get the points then. And then he heads off on his own because he spots Tokieda and Suwa's squad people, goes to hang out with them for a bit, and Kikuchihara is left to talk with Osamu. And he says, do you think that you guys actually have a chance in the B-rank wars? And Osama says, yeah, I know that we can't actually rely on Kuga's skill, and I'm dragging them down, and I have to get better. And Kikuchihara says, yeah, how are you going to get better? Because you're just assuming that you can actually catch up. That's really arrogant of you. And so someone looks all shocked, and Kikuchihara walks off and he says, for your next match, I hear Kazama is going to be doing the commentary, so try not to disappoint him too much.
Out there, you can hear Annalise getting angry at Kikuchihara again. Just like, that motherfucker! Shit on Osamu!
Although, what's his face from, Suicide Squad? I don't fucking know.
I don't know his name.
This was a guy from a few B-rank wars ago, and he's like, so is Samu friends with the Kikuchihara? I've never seen him actually chat with anyone outside of the Kazama Squad one-on-one before. So maybe there is actually a little bit of a positive meaning to what Kikuchihara is telling Osamu. I don't know. They get back to Tamakoma Squad, and Usami says, that's not her name. I'll get it next time, whatever. He says, by the way, Osamu, you and Chika have a guest waiting for you in the living room. So he joins them.
Osamu's like, oh, I hope it's Michael Bolton. It's just someone random.
And it's Amatori, douchebag Amatori. Basically makes himself known to, not Amatori, fucking Ninomiya. Amatori's the other guy, I'm so sorry. Ninomiya comes in and he's like, I'm Ninomiya from Ninomiya Squad. Hey. So have a seat. And they're like, oh my god, we're going to have a match against them next. And so he says, I'll get, keep this brief. You know the name Rinji Amatori, right? So presumably he has a connection to Chika's brother.
Actually, Nick, this is something I didn't know. This was posted up in the World Trigger thread on my forum. If you go back to the chapter where they showed the flashback of when that whole event happened,
the one where you see it from Osamu's perspective,
yeah, you actually see Ninomiya is one of the people who visit the house to investigate it.
Wow.
So it's very likely that Ninomiya had some connection with Chika's brother.
That's cool. Love that long-term planning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so this, it's interesting, because the only other thing we knew about this guy is, oh, God, you're an arrogant douchebag, but this is kind of important. So.
You're a big jerkwad. Oh, wait, you have depth.
Yeah. So yeah, looking forward to this now.
And I'm kind of excited to get back to the rank wars a little bit. We got a tease of what's to come, but I'm excited to see this finished up. We got a little bit more Osamu foreshadowing for what he's going to be doing. And I also like that, again, this is a series. It's like, every other series, like, hard work will let you overcome any hurdle. Yeah, fuck that. That's arrogant and shitty to think. Sometimes you're just behind people. You'll always be behind. You have to find another way to get ahead.
So yeah, continuing to build to this idea that Osama's actually going to have to get better in some capacity in order for them to be able to accomplish their goal, and looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Yep.
But yeah, that's going to do it for the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, and I think that we might just wrap it up here.
Yeah, that's it. I think we're good to go.
Not a long episode by our recent standards, but still a pretty good length one, so... thank you everyone for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show live on twitch.tv/RoloT, normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, although sometimes we do need to change it up. So follow us on Twitter. He is at RoloT, I'm at YRoller of Time, and we'll notify you when we're actually going to start recording the show. Also, be sure to check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com or subscribe to us on iTunes, and make sure to leave a comment or, that kind of thing. Rate us.
Five
beat the woodworkers.
Here. Somehow, one day we'll do it.
Also, be sure to send us criticism, questions, and suggestions in the comments section, or email them to us. WeeklyMangaRecap@yahoo.com is the best place to do that. Special thanks also go out to Steve Mann, our tile artist. You can check out his work at rockfanboy.deviantart.com, idrawboobs.tumblr.com, and patreon.com/Steve Mann, as well as the infamous planet. and Felix Stark too for making those special visual editions of our podcast. Recently, the infamous Planet completed the Annalise Crispin voiced or narrated read. I don't fucking know. Third part of Chris's ever expanding dirty World Trigger fic.
This one wasn't as filthy as it usually was. It's much more
dramatic.
It
was about the
plot,
the characters.
It was about character development, Nick. Osamu's really going through an arc at this point. Kind of need this to tell the rest of the story of them fucking furiously across the world. Oh, God. Like, she's too embarrassed to, like... She's like, I want to send this link to my friends and coworkers, but I'll be ousted from the Shonen Jump community. I like to think somewhere in the office is a big picture of me with an X through it, with fucking, like, no fanfics underneath.
Oh, God. Banned from the premises.
Yeah, like, if you see this man, you don't let him in. And if you do let him in, you don't let him near a microphone with a fucking fanfic he just wrote. There's gonna be a Digimon reference in there, and the rest of it's gonna be filthy.
But